I understand the problem. When was the last time you felt like, I've got this, and it seemed like it was going really well, and then it didn't end so well? And sometimes it's like that when you get blessings in your life. You think about what you really want to see happen, and you get it. And once you have it, it doesn't seem like it satisfies you like you thought it would. I mean, it's one thing in life to be dissatisfied because you don't have what you want. There's something that you really like to have and you never seem to get it, and so you have a reason. You're like, well, no wonder I'm not happy or satisfied. But it's extremely frustrating, even perplexing, when you get what you want, when you have what you asked for, when you got more and more and more, you got something new, and yet the satisfaction didn't last, and then it's like, well, now what? And maybe you can relate. You got the girl you wanted, or you got the job promotion, or you got the car you wanted, or the new phone, or the vacation, or you lost the weight, or whatever it is. You wanted something really bad, and now you have it. And yet the satisfaction didn't last, and it's just sort of like, well, what do I do now? Now, most of us, we just think of something else to want or more. We think, well, it must be this or that, or if I could just get more of this. But at some point, you do realize it's not working. Maybe it's something different. And that's what we've been talking about in this series. What do we do about dissatisfaction? Now, we've been saying that it's not a new problem. This has been going on forever, and God has some things to say about it. So look at the series' big idea. We're blessed to be a blessing. So we're saying, hey, God will give you lots of cool things in your life, and they'll be fun and exciting, and I'll enjoy them. But unless I share them, I'm never satisfied. Blessings come in, and it's like, right on. But if I don't share them, I'm not satisfied. But when blessings come in, I enjoy them, and I share the blessing, satisfaction happens. Here's how God frames it in the Bible. I'll make you into a great nation, and I'll bless you. That's good news. I'll make your name great, and you'll be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I'll curse. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. So that's what we're saying. God's saying, I'll bless you. I'm going to give you stuff that's going to come into your life, but it's when it goes out of your life that you're satisfied. So here's the definition we've been working in. Bless, using who I am and what I have to help people move closer to Jesus because they believe he cares about them. And at some point, somehow, it became sort of religious and became sort of the mark of the church that the way to get people to move closer to God was to make them feel really guilty, or to scare them, or to threaten them what's going to happen after they die. To somehow picture God as a very stern, holy, you better have your act together God. And that if we pictured God that way to other people, that they would move closer to him. Which is silly, because think of the people in your life that don't make you feel good about who you are. Do you find yourself moving closer towards them? Think of anybody in your life that guilt trips you or puts you down or makes you feel less than. Do you find yourself wanting to be hanging around them all the time? See, the real message is God cares about us. That's East Lake Church. That's our whole message. God cares about you wherever you're at, with the idea that if someone thinks God cares about them, don't you like to hang around the people in your life that you know care about you? So when people think, well, God cares about me, that's what moves them closer. Now, here's how we've been talking about the blessings. They come in, they go out, causes someone to think God cares about them. We broke it down into the word bless. Begin in prayer. So this is all we said that first week. And by the way, if you go to our website, East Lake Live, you can listen to all this stuff if you missed one. Begin in prayer. This is all we said. What if everybody, imagine if everybody got up in the morning, no matter where you stand with God, everybody got up in the morning, and this is what they prayed. God, who do you want me to bless today? That's it. Simple prayer. Can you imagine how different the world would be? Just, God, who do you want me to bless today? And the second thing, we talked about listening. And that's where I kind of played my cards up front. That's not the most easy one for me that's ever been, to listen. I've had to work really hard to be a listener, because usually when people are talking, I'm listening for when they stop talking so I can talk. I'm not listening to anything they say. I'm just waiting for the noise to stop, the volume to, like, quit, so the really important talker can begin, you know? And that's what I call listening. It's not listening. And my wife's helped me see that many, many, many times. But it's listening is actually engaging with the other person and not just taking in what they say. Remember on that weekend, we said listening is actually thinking about what you could say that would get the other person to talk about what's actually going on in their life. So I'm not just listening. I'm actually thinking as I'm listening, I wonder what I could say. How could I get them to talk about what's going on in their life? See, that's listening. If listening was tennis, it means I'm hitting the ball to the person on the other side of the net at just the right location so they can hit it back. That's listening. Then we talked about eating. We said share food with other people, what it means to have an open table, adjust your budget and time so you're eating and being with other people. Last week we had the S, and that's serve. How do I show up in people's life to help them get what they want? Now, maybe you're the kind of person, I know I can be the kind of person, that I'm always gauging things. How could everybody help the universe turn out like I need it to turn out? Instead of getting with people and say, gosh, I wonder what their dreams and desires are. How could I be with them in a way the blessings have come into my life, and it's actually going out of my life when I think to myself, how could I help them get what they want? I'll be satisfied. Do you know it's very satisfying if you're connected with someone? I had a friend whose grandson had cerebral palsy, born with cerebral palsy. And he was talking to us one time about it. And he said his little grandson moved his little pinky. But nobody else saw it. And they were looking right at his hand, and nobody else saw his pinky move but him. And he said, you know what? When you're connected with someone in a way that you care about them, you notice change in a micro manner. Because you are... He goes, I was the only one that saw him move his pinky because I am so connected to my grandson. Everybody missed it but me. And he was so satisfied. When you're connected with someone, like you're really wanting to see the best for them, you notice things in their life that nobody else does. Now today we're going to talk about the last S, share your story. The story part of it. How does my story, particularly my God story, end up a blessing for someone else? Now if you come today and you think, well, I don't even have a God story, I'm not even walking with God, that's okay. Maybe some lights will go on as we talk through this today. But you probably have some kind of God story. There's probably something that's gone on with you and God, or you've thought about God or something. And so as you're listening along, you're probably in it somewhere. And here's our big idea. Your Jesus story is a blessing to someone, everybody and anybody. Here's what the Bible says. Before people can pray to the Lord for help, they must believe in him. And before they can believe in the Lord, they must hear about him. And for anyone to hear about the Lord, someone must tell them. And before anyone can go and tell them, they must be sent. As the scriptures say, how wonderful it is to see someone coming to tell good news. And just as an aside, with social media and the networking that goes on and the internet and TV, I mean, I think all of us would probably say we have enough exposure to bad news. I mean, it's coming from everywhere. You just get overwhelmed by all the bad news. And it really does stick out when someone shows up with good news, especially now when there's so much news and so much, and bad news sells. And so you got a lot of bad news swirling around, and when someone shows up with good news, and that's what the story is. Now, there's a little quote. You may have heard this before. Francis of Assisi, preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words. So we're going to use that as a context today. Preach the gospel at all times. Here's what he's saying. Your walk and your talk have to line up. So I want to ask you a question. When is the last someone lectured you in some area of your life? They gave you a lecture on how you need to live your life, yet they don't live their life that way. How did that feel? When's the last time you got a lecture from someone telling you what you needed to do, but they don't do it? What this is saying is that your walk and your talk, they have to line up. Your story's got to match your behavior. How you act with people is always setting up your story. My wife is great at this. I mean, I've watched her for years and years and years. She's super, super good at this. Even like where she works now, She'll go to work somewhere, and she doesn't tell anybody that she's like a Christ follower, that she goes to church or she helps start a church or anything like that. She just works there and gets to know people, and she's warm and friendly, and she makes friends with everybody, and she doesn't like play that out front. She just, everybody gets to know her, and they like her. She's a people person. And then sure enough, and I've seen this happen so many times, it'll leak out like 5 or 6 months later. It'll start to leak out that she goes to church or that she's a Christ follower. And like half those people start to panic. Oh, my God, I can't tell her what I did Friday night. And other people are worried about the stories I said. And everybody's like freaking out. Like, why did she say she was Christian? That's not fair. But here's the thing, and here's what they have to deal with. All of them have to deal with the fact that they like somebody that goes to church. And they like somebody that follows Jesus. Because the walk matches the talk. Have you seen anybody that puts the little fish emblem on their car? Have you ever seen the little fish emblem? Like it's a little fish. They put it on the back of their bumper sticker or something like that. And they want everybody to know, I guess, that, hey, everybody, you know, there's a Christian God person driving this car. And I don't have one of those on my car because I don't think Jesus wants to get credit for how I drive my car. I don't think he wants to have any, he doesn't want anybody to know that a Christ follower guy is driving that car. And so I don't try to like pull him into that at all. It's like, you know, but I think we like, don't we do that though? We keep our Jesus life in a little compartment over here. We don't want anybody to see it. We don't want people in the pub to see it, our friend, the people we play golf with, our boss. We don't want them to see any of that. We keep that over here. Because that part of our life doesn't line up. So, and all we're talking about in this one is walk matches talk. And at some point, you have to say something. You have to share something. At some point, Jesus has to get the credit. Somehow. Or they're just going to think you're a good person. Maybe they think you came from a good family, or, boy, you've done a lot of changing. If at some point it doesn't get tied back into, oh, well, maybe that's happening in his life or her life is because they follow Jesus. And some of that's the story that you tell. So today I'm going to weave my story into how we tell our story. Okay, so that's kind of how we're going to do it. And we're going to break it into three different parts. So let me read you one last little thing, and then we'll get to it. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. So all it's saying in the Bible is like, be ready. Look for opportunities to tie it back into Jesus. And that's what we're going to talk about as we finish up. Number one is before. So we're going to break the story into before, during, and after. Every story has a before, during, and after. And in a God story, there's a before. Here's mine. I have always believed and talked to God. As far back as I remember, I thought there was, I think I probably started like there's something out there. And then at one point it became someone for me. And it didn't always match up with science at school and different things that people thought. And it was just in me. There's someone out there. And as a little kid, very young, I started talking to that someone. I wasn't religious. I didn't have religious people around me. I didn't go to school, so I never called it prayer. I just started talking. And I came from a family probably just like yours. There was issues in my family. And there was dysfunction in my family. Do you know anybody that isn't? And I had stuff going on. And it worried me and concerned me and overwhelmed me. And I would talk to God about it. I just started doing that at a very young age. I just started talking to him. Before I ever stepped over the line, before I ever followed, before I ever knew who Jesus was, ever saw by any of that, I talked to God. Now, my before story has been super helpful at times with people because I'll run into people and they'll ask me, do you think God would even listen to my prayers? I mean, I'm not Christian. I don't go to church. I'm not religious. They have the idea, which I think a lot of people have this idea, that God starts caring about me after I go to church. God starts wanting to be with me after I become religious. God starts caring about my life after I give him my life. And that's not my story. So my story has been super helpful to people that have the question, do you think God's watching or care? I mean, I don't go with him. I do a lot of stuff I know I shouldn't do. I mean, I believe in him. And I'm always able to say, well, he did with me. I started talking to him at a super young age. And I started keeping track of Does it seem like he's listening? Is anything changing? I would talk to him about all kinds of stuff before I'd go to sleep at night, and then I would track it and see if anything happened. And I was convinced at a young age, he's involved somehow. It's not always turning out like I want to, but somehow I think there's something going on here. And I'm able to tell people that authentically in my story. All the time I get to say that to people. Now, you've got something in your story. What's unique about your before? That may be just the thing that someone else needs to hear. Now, I move forward in my story towards the end of it. 17, 18, 19 years old, I did what most of those people do. I was into partying and alcohol and drugs, and I went too far with drugs, farther than I ever should have, and pretty soon the drug had a hold of me. I didn't mean it to start that way, and if you struggle like that, I'm sure you didn't. Nobody ever starts out and says, I hope I become a drug addict and this ruins my life. No, it's fun. It's a party. Other people are doing it. It's something you do because everybody's doing it and it's cool. And for the first few times, it's trippy and a lot of fun. But at some point, it gets a hold of you. Now I'm not going to work. Now I have no money. Now I'm lying to people. And it just, at some point, you start to realize, crap. And then you can't stop. And that's when it really gets scary. And that was me at 20 years old. I didn't mean for it to go that far. And all through that time, and this is may rock your world a little bit, but times where I was high as a kite, I still talked to God, and I still felt like he was listening. Never went to church. I didn't have any religious people to take me to church. I didn't know anybody that could invite me to church, but I was still talking to God until one night when I was 20 years old. I went to bed high as a kite, been smoking weed all day long, and I sat down on my bed, and I tried to talk to God, and I kept fading out. It was like when you're on your cell phone and the call keeps dropping. It's so annoying. It's like, crap, you know, get in cell coverage. And that's what it felt like, except for I was the one out of cell coverage. And it terrified me. I remember being so, it was the first time I had ever remembered trying to talk to God and couldn't do it. I remember sitting that night going, oh, and this was my thought. How far, what's happened to you? Now you can't even talk to God. And the next morning I got up and I was worried and scared. And that's a part of my before story that's been very important to be able to share with some people at the right time to say, I know what it's like to feel like maybe God has given up on you. You might know somebody and they might feel like, I think I pushed him too far this time. Because that's how I felt. I felt like, you know what? Maybe I pushed him too far this time. And now, and that's my before story. Now, the question we answer in there is like, why did you start to seek? Well, that's when I started to figure out, I got to decide what to do. So number two, during, what caused me to make a decision? Now, everything I just told you happened before I ever decided to follow. So when people come around me and ask, can you have something going on with God? I get people all the time. Well, if they go to this church, can they still have something? Can they, if they do that? And I'm always like, yes, they can. God's bigger than all that. They can have lots of stuff going on with God. But that doesn't mean they made a decision to follow God. Now, why did that happen for me? What occurred? Well, here I am, you know, my catalytic moment. I can't talk to God anymore. I looked like one of those ducks on a pond, that if you look on the duck on the pond, it just looks like it's gliding along, everything's fine, but underneath the water, it's like, that's what I looked like. On the outside, to my friends and people around me, they wouldn't have thought anything was really wrong at all. In fact, I looked just like my friends. I was doing the same stuff. I was trying to make everything look fine, just like we do. So on the outside, everything looked okay in my life, but on the inside, where I live and where you live, I was falling apart. I knew I was. And now I couldn't talk to God. I couldn't connect with him. I couldn't keep a conversation going. And I only knew one guy at that point that I had heard was going to church. And I just knew this one guy I heard was going to church. And I just want to kind of put it this way. That guy and I who had hung out together, the kind of stuff we did together didn't look anything like church. So I was like, he goes to church now, that guy? You know, I knew this one guy. And he got a hold of me, and he sat down and talked to me why he started going to church. And talked to me why he started to walk with God. He's the only person I knew. And I was super fortunate that he invited me to go to a church. And you know what? It was the very first Eastlake that he invited me to go to. This was 37 years ago. The very first Eastlake church there ever was. He invited me to go to that church. It was the first church that started all these churches. And he invited me to go on a weekend. And I had reservations. Because I was like, I'll probably just feel bad about myself. I'm going to go in there and find out. I don't know anything. It's going to seem stupid. You know, everybody's going to be so great, and I'm not great. And I had lots of... And this Eastlake church, the people that we're trying to be here for, that's how they're feeling. There's 50,000 people this morning within 20 minutes of this location that aren't in church today, and we live in the most religious state in America. There's 50,000, that's what statistics say, that aren't even going to any type of church. They're not going anywhere today because they feel like they don't want to. It's not going to help, or I'll get back to it someday. And I was worse than that. I was like, oh, man, what's going to happen? And they took me in, and I was so surprised. Because it was like Eastlake. It was just like this. There was people that welcomed you at the front, and they had coffee to drink, and everybody was warm and friendly. I thought for sure that I would be judged. I would find out right away. I could never do this, and was very anxious to come in. We're laser-focused here. That's why we have greeters and coffee, and we try to make it warm and friendly, because we know a lot of people are going to walk into Eastlake, and they're going to be like I was that first day. Like, do you know what I thought? And I'm not proud of this, but this is what I thought. I remember driving with him on the way to church, and I thought to myself, gosh, how bad has my life got that I'm actually going to church? I mean, that's how I considered it. I was like, man, has my life got this bad that I actually have to go to church? I think people come every Sunday to our East Lakes with that attitude. They're like, really? And I remember going in, it was so different than I thought. I even liked the music. Like right off the bat, I pictured a whole different type of music, and I liked the music, and the guy doing the talk was talking in a way that I understood. I had such a different idea that what it was going to be like. I remember being there going, gosh, this is so different than I thought. I had no idea this was even out there. The people looked just like me. They seemed like me. They seemed normal. And yet, and I want you to catch this, I noticed something different about them. I'd been to concerts and sporting events and tons of parties, and I'd been in lots of groups of people that I liked being with, but there was something different. I have a family that I'm friends with, and over the last couple of weeks, this mom, this lady, has been posting pictures of her daughter and her when she was her daughter's age. So the first time I saw it, because I know him pretty well, I saw the girl that I know, and I saw her mom, and I was like, whoa, dang, I mean, they really look alike. I mean, here's me at her age, and here's her, and I was like, wow, I mean, they really look alike. I mean, very, very similar. And then this is what I thought, well, what am I so amazed about that for? They're the same blood. Of course they're going to look alike. Of course there's going to be a similarity. You know, of course there's going to be a resemblance. And when I was thinking about that this week, it reminded me of the first time I went to that church service. Because I remember, like, the people, it seemed like they resembled God. Which shouldn't surprise me, because have you ever heard the old saying, we're saved by his blood? Do you know all that means is that when you cross over that line, you have the same blood as God now. You're in the family. You have the bloodline. You and him are blood related now. That's all that means. So it shouldn't surprise me that mom and his daughter would look alike. They have the same blood. And it shouldn't have surprised me then that the people in this church resembled God. They weren't God, but boy, did they resemble him. And that's what seemed different. My story always includes a church part because I remember going for the first time. I hope yours will too. You know, someplace where people can go and be a part of it always has that. And I remember when I finally decided to step over that line, I was in that service. And the person that was doing the talk said, you know, Jesus will take you right where you're at right now. And it was so foreign to me. I was so convinced there was so much I needed to do. Jesus will take you right where you're at right now. And there was something about that. I thought, okay, I'm going to find out then. I had a load of drugs back at home. Okay. And I stepped over that line. And I gave my life to him. 37 years ago, I just said, okay, I've been trying to talk to you. I've been trying to get through to you all these years. I'm not following you. I'm starting today. There is a line that you step over. There is a moment that you decide. Doesn't mean God hasn't been a big part of your life, but there is a moment that it begins for people. And that's part of my story. I had a moment. And I tell people that. I remember my moment. I remember how it felt. And I'll tell you about that. And we'll, number three is after. How has Jesus changed me? And I just want to be quick here, and I'm going to just use one word, hope. Before I started following Jesus, hope always slipped away so quickly. And I wasn't like a, I mean, I had friends and I had people around me and I went to high school and graduated. I mean, I was like, you know, normal standard guy. But I think because of my family background and having so many promises broken and getting my hopes up so high so many times and having it not come through, it was like I sort of trained myself that something bad was going to always ruin it. It wasn't like I stopped hoping. But it was like, I just had this, it's not going to work out. It was like my Achilles heel. Something's going to ruin it. And since I've been walking with Jesus, that's what's different. And that's what I tell people. My circumstances don't create my hope anymore. He does. In fact, this has been the mantra of my life, and I'll tell people this. I'll say, you know, God does a lot of different things in my life the way I want them to go. A lot of things happen in my life that don't go the way I want to go, and I can't figure out why he won't change it. But here's one thing I know. He's always there. He'll be a part of my life. He may give me what I want. He may work it out, comma, but he'll always be there. And now I've noticed, when I first became Christian, I thought, well, the reason I have hope is because God's going to come in on a big white horse and make everything turn out the way I want it to be. And after about 6 months, you realize that's a fairy tale. That's not God. The reason I have hope now is because he'll always be there. Worst day, best day, he'll always be there. And that's the biggest change I tell people. They say, hey, what is so different now? What's the result of it all? And I say, hope. Hope, man. On my best day and on my worst day, it's still Jesus. That's where my hope comes from. And it's never left me. And do you know my story? The minute I opened my eyes from my prayer, it was there. I recognized it. It has never left. 37 years going strong. I have hope every day. Now, that's good news in someone's story to some people. Not everybody. But there's people that God bring into my life. They need to hear that. They're a roller coaster ride on circumstances. Now here's the last part of it, and write it in your name. The bottom line, someone needs to hear your story. Let me read you something really, really cool out of the Bible, and this is beautiful. Here's another way to put it. You're here to be a light, bringing out God's colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you here on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you prompt people to open up to God, this generous Father in heaven. What's your story? There's somebody that is just perfect for any part of it.